some people have said sometimes that if there were an area particularly where there were concerns of women maybe being assaulted or feeling particularly scared, that there should be a curfew on men for a period of time. Is that something that you would consider?
It wouldn't be on the top of the list of things that we would consider, because it would be at the very best a temporary intervention.
You would, if they were crisis, I'm sorry, to be clear, you say you wouldn't, it's not the top of your list. I can only take it from that that you could not rule out that being a potentially something that you would do.
If it were a crisis and you needed to take dramatic action that allowed that drawn down, then of course you'd be prepared to consider all measures that would.
Well, that's it. I kid you not, you heard correctly, ladies and gentlemen. Is Mark Drakeford, the First Minister of Wales, refusing to rule out a curfew for all men? And of course, it's always a crisis, isn't it? In a crisis. And it's always temporary. And this is where this lockdown stuff has led to. Even this is a serious discussion. I mean, is it likely to happen? No. But for it even to be a discussion, to have a senior minister of Wales, of a nation in the UK, to refuse to rule out, in a crisis, of course, a curfew for men after 6 o'clock. I mean, this country it's unstable now. And this was followed up after this little speech here from this genius from the Green Party. This is all as a result of the murder, the abduction and murder of a young lady called Sarah Everard, who was abducted and, it appears, murdered by a police officer. But could you imagine if it was a black man? Could you imagine saying, let's have a curfew on all black men, or even black youths, which commit a huge amount of crime, the vast majority of knife crime, for example. I don't know the stats, but we have different cultures in this country where I even did a video about incest. I mean, is that not abusive to women? But you see, that's part of the pardoned group, you know, because they're Muslims or they're from the Pakistani community or whatever. So that's just part of their culture. They're not too worried about women then, because incest is committed. It's rape in the family. And that's just one example. But the whole point of just boiling this down to the lowest common denominator of gender, these people are impervious to irony, it would seem, and totally oblivious, or willfully ignorant, more like, to their own odious double standards and hypocrisy. I mean, could you imagine if it was any other group? But you see, men in this cultural Marxist construct are part of the evil category, and women are part of the victim category. But if this was, as I said, for example, if this had been, say it was a gay man who had committed this murder, or a black man, and we said, let's lock down all black people, just for example. Could you imagine? I mean, we go out of our way in shows like this to not sort of tar everyone with the same brush, whether it's the Jewish angle, whether it's even the black community. We try and be fair, so we're not tarring everyone with the same brush. I think most of us do try to be fair. We always, I mean, my view is you always treat people as individuals, but it doesn't mean you ignore the collective. The fact of the matter is most of the violent and sexual crime in this country is committed by the black community, young black youths mainly. But this discussion was not about who's committing these crimes against women. It's just hysteria stoked up again, and this place has just went crazy over the weekend with this. Again, it was like Black Lives Matter last year. The police have come under a lot of pressure and criticism for policing the lockdowns, but the same politicians who voted for the lockdowns and these authoritarian rules are out now virtue signaling about the heavy-handedness of the police. Because like the Black Lives Matter protests, there's a blind eye turned to the safety of gathering in large numbers, which is illegal, I thought. But if it's some old lady or whatever, and the police are out arresting and harassing them, which they've been doing, then these politicians, Jess Phillips, Keir Starmer, all these other virtue signalers are nowhere to be seen. These are the same people who voted for the lockdown and are now criticizing the police for policing legislation that they voted for. I mean, it just head spinning, the obliviousness to and the how these people are so impervious to irony. I mean, talk about being selective with who's allowed to gather and who you support and who you don't. But again, within this cultural Marxist construct, women are victims and all men are evil. But, you know, as I said, if you were to point out, and more accurately, you know, if you were to sort of narrow it down as to who's committing the crime, but that discussion hasn't been had. Are there different cultures or ethnic groups in this country perpetrating more violent sexual crime towards women or generally? No one dared look in that direction. It's just, are the streets safe over here? And this genius that I'll play in a second, this was her. I mean, it really is just, this country is unstable now, it feels. But again, just the absolute, I mean, as I say, these people are just totally, willfully ignorant to their own hypocrisy and double standard, because if anybody dared said, well, we think a lot of the majority of these crimes are being committed by the black community, let's have a curfew on young black men, for example, which are a group which are overrepresented in crime stats. I mean, you would be hounded till the day you die for your racism and bigotry. But here they are.
The week that the woman, Sarah Everard, was abducted and we suppose killed because remains have been found in a woodland in Kent, I would argue that at the next opportunity for any bill that's appropriate, I might actually put in an amendment to create a curfew for men on the streets after 6 p.m.
Genius. Would you really?
Sheffield would make women a lot safer. And
yeah, you see, it's all about safety now, so just lock down everybody. We can't go out. We might get a virus. Just lock all men down. I mean, it's always a crisis. It's always an emergency.
Discrimination of all kinds would be lessened. But women once convicted, their chances of successful appeal are extremely slim. Society's understanding of domestic abuse has come such a long way, even in the last few years, and yet a jury is forced to apply outdated ideas of self-defense, such as responding to a threat of imminent harm, which have no relation to the realities of domestic abuse. Now, the government has said that they aren't persuaded on the issue, but will monitor the use of existing defences and keep under review the need for any statutory change.
Anyway, as I said, this country has just gone unstable, and this is, I think, the president was set these lockdowns now, because this is just absolute insanity that's going on. All the virtue signalling over this woman, but as I say, no one dared, you know, get into the specifics of who commits most of the crimes. Here's Farage. This is worth listening to. Farage has sometimes got some useful things to say on certain topics. And, of course, this does cause division straight down the middle between gender. To be tarring all men with the same brush. I mean, it's crazy. So, anyway, I'll play a clip with Farage because I thought this was worth listening to.
We're all rightly shocked and saddened by the abduction and murder of young Sarah Everard. We really are. I'm particularly surprised, I think, that the person that has been, and we mustn't prejudge this, but the person that has been arrested and charged is actually a member of one of the elite groups from the Metropolitan Police. And it has touched a chord. Note Kate turning up quietly, discreetly at Clapham Common yesterday and laying a couple of bunches of daffodils. What a contrast she is as a duchess to the other duchess that spoke to us last Sunday. But we're not just talking about abduction and murder. We're now beginning to talk more broadly about women being safe on the streets, and in particular about the behaviour and attitudes of men. And that is why we saw the vigil taking place on Clapham Common. And the big row now is about the way in which it was policed. Several arrests and the police appearing to get quite heavy-handed. Indeed, Sadiq Khan demanding an inquiry, the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, demanding an inquiry as to how this was policed. Now, I do understand that, because this is the very same police force who took the knee last year to BLM protesters who went on to desecrate some of our national monuments. So there does appear to be an inconsistency here. But there's a parallel with the BLM uprising last year following the murder, the death of George Floyd. And it's one that I think we need to talk about. Following that BLM uprising, we've now had month after month of white people being told they are guilty. Those of us that are white, we have white privilege. And some of this nonsense is being taught in our schools. It isn't healing any racial divides. All it's actually doing is dividing black and white, and hugely counterproductive. And there is a danger that in the debate about this abduction and murder, and more broadly, how safe women are on the streets, all of which is a valid debate, there's a danger we go way too far in our criticism of men and broaden this out from bad people to men as a group. Just see this from Baroness Jenny Jones in the House of Lords.
I would argue that at the next opportunity for any bill that's appropriate, I might actually put in an amendment to create a curfew for men on the streets after 6 p.m, which I feel would make women a lot safer, and discrimination of all kinds would be lessened.
Now, was she being altogether serious? Was she being provocative? Why, you might ask, are people like this even in the House of Lords at all? So perhaps we don't take that too seriously, but what about this? The First Minister of Wales, Mark Drakeford, being pressed by the BBC on whether he could contemplate in Wales putting that curfew in place for all men. Here he is.
Some people have said sometimes that there should be a curfew on men for a period of time. Is that something that you would consider?
It wouldn't be on the top of the list of things that we would consider, because it would be, at the very best, a temporary intervention.
But you would, I'm sorry, to be clear, you say you wouldn't, it's not the top of your list. I can only take it from that you could not rule out that being a potentially something that you would do.
It were a crisis, and you needed to take dramatic action that allowed that crisis to be drawn down, then of course you'd be prepared to consider all measures that would make a difference.
Yes, that's right. The First Minister of Wales, if there was a crisis, if there was a scare, something akin to the Yorkshire Ripper 40 years ago, or perhaps the Ipswich murderer who was on the run just a few years back, he would be prepared to bring into place a curfew for all men. Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, now telling us that men need to be educated better, and that misogyny must become a crime, so I can feel another hate crime, speech crime, thought crime, perhaps coming down the track. And all of this is in danger of alienating men and saying that men as a group are dangerous. That's rather like saying teenagers are dangerous because they might be carrying a knife, they might stab you. Or saying Muslims are dangerous because they're all going to be jihadi terrorists. Well, it's not true in the case of teenagers. It's not true in the case of Muslims. And it certainly isn't true in the case of all men. Yes, there are some who behave terribly. But we need to get a sense of perspective on this before we start rushing to legislation and teaching kids at school that it's wrong to be male.
Anyway, you know, this cultural Marxist construct that we live in, spoken about it recently, of the weaponizing of feminine, the of women and that women being launched into the political arena being a wrecking ball, but just in the culture generally, is it women should be scared of men, or is it men should be scared of women? How easy is it in the current climate for a woman to make an accusation against a man, whether it's got any credibility or not, for that man to be dragged through the courts and have his life ruined because of some bitter, over-emotional woman who decides to get revenge, say if she's unhappy in a relationship? Because that stuff does go on. So who should be scared of who? Because the state is with women. And if you're a white male, particularly, you do not get afforded any benefit of the doubt, and you are guilty until proven innocent in an environment like this. And it's just incredible to think that we're having these conversations. You know, that, okay, as I said earlier, highly unlikely that'll ever happen. But into this pot of cultural Marxism, you throw in these lockdowns and this obsession with zero COVID and zero emissions. Now it's zero crime, for zero men after 6 o'clock. I mean, it's getting scary. It really is. Could you imagine a curfew where you couldn't go out of the house after 6 o'clock because you're a man? And this place erupted over the weekend, like Black Lives Matter style. And as I say, these hypocrite politicians who support this legislation for lockdowns are now siding with the feminists. And by the way, I think that they should be able to protest whatever. But they're very selective with who they support and who they turn a blind eye to. Because I've seen footage of police harassing 75-year-old women and dragging them off into vans for being out. And not obeying the COVID legislation. And not a word has been said about this tyranny. Boris Johnson here has said he is deeply concerned by footage showing police officers detaining women at Saturday's vigil to remember Sarah Everard. But he wasn't deeply concerned about any other, including women, by the way, being harassed by police and handcuffed. As I've seen footage of this, the little old ladies out being out walking about and getting pulled in and harassed, and not a word about it's been said. The Prime Minister will chair a meeting of the Crime and Justice Task Force later to discuss ways to protect women. Officers handcuffed women and removed them from the gathering on Clapham Common in London on Saturday. Met Police Commissioner Dame Cressida Dickin, a lesbian, has dismissed calls to resign and defended the force's action. She said she was more determined to lead the Met and hit out at armchair critics. But you see, this is all, you know, this is where this leads, with a selective supporting of who you can, you know, lock down and who you're not. I mean, to an extent, the police are doing what's, you know, some of them abuse those powers. And they should never have been a situation where you can legislate against public gatherings anyway, crisis or not. But to some extent, if the police are going to be consistent, they, you know, because they'll come under criticism if they're, you know, showing solidarity towards this, because that means they'd be supporting one group right to protest and another group lack of ability and right to protest, because people have been arrested for protesting the COVID laws. She said she will join Mr. Johnson at the task force meeting, which will discuss what further action is needed to make streets safer for women. If they really wanted to make streets safer for women, they're going to have to be a little bit more targeted in who's committing the crimes. Because you can be guaranteed that it's other cultures and other ethnic groups in this country coming in from the third world. And, of course, the grooming gang type guys, those radical Muslim types, those sort of who carry these barbaric Wahhabist Islamic views, and how they treat their women even in their own families. And as I said, the obvious disproportionately high representation of black youth committing the crime, will any of that be mentioned if they're really interested in protecting women? No. And by the way, these are the same women who will be protesting and have been protesting with their big placards saying, immigrants welcome. Because if we do break it down, you'll see that it's third world cultures, backward cultures, who are inconsistent with just even Western secular ideas or a civilization which, up until recently, still maintained some sort of Christian identity and ethics and morals. And we allow a lot of people into this country who don't share the same Western values and the type of values that built Western civilization. And a lot of these yapping, hysterical women, well, as I said, are feminists who will be open border proponents and supporters, virtue signaling all day long, and then they go moaning about crime and, you know, violent crime against women. Government sources said both the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, and the Prime Minister had confidence in Dame Cressida. As I say, Dame Cressida, the lesbian, who's presided over one of the most lawless periods in London's history. And that same little weasel Sadiq Khan, who does nothing about knife crime and virtue signals and does interviews with far left commentators and doesn't do any other interviews and is getting rich off being the mayor of London and destroying the economy in London, he's out now virtue signaling for women, all the while doing nothing to deal with crime and stopping stop and search and things like that for knife crime. As I say, it's just completely oblivious to their own hypocrisy and double standards, or, as I said, willfully ignorant. But it doesn't seem to matter anymore. You can point out all the double standards and inconsistencies all you want. These people, no one really cares. Mrs. Patel has instructed the police watchdog, Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary, to conduct a lessons learned review to the policing of the event, the Prime Minister has said. Johnson said he was deeply concerned by the scenes on Clapham Common on Saturday night and that Dame Cressida had, quote, committed to reviewing how this was handled. They have to make these really difficult calls, and I don't think anybody should be sitting back in an armchair and saying, well, that was done badly, or I would have done it differently, without actually understanding what was going through their mind, she said. She added that what happened to Mrs. Everard made her, quote, more determined, unquote, to lead the organization. Four people arrested for public order and coronavirus regulation breaches, Met said. Hundreds gathered at the bandstand in Clapham Common, South London. Plenty of them with no masks on. And again, I don't believe they should be wearing masks, but these are the same type of people who love all these authoritarian rules and regulations and mask wearing and lockdowns and all the rest of it. Same type of people until something or some cause overrides the lockdown rules when it suits them. The hundreds gathered at the bandstand in Clapham Common on Saturday evening for a vigil for Mrs. Everard, who went missing while walking home from a friend's house on the 3rd of March. Her remains were later found in a woodland in Kent, and Met Police Officer Wayne Cousins, 48, has been charged with the 33-year-old kidnap and murder. So, more chaos, more instability. I mean, where will it ever end? It really just does feel that the whole country is just very unstable right now. and that you're having these suggestions of, you know, even for it to be mentioned about locking men down and, you know, curfews and stuff like that. I'm going to play a clip because this type of stuff, some of the, you know, the Farages of this world and even Julia Hartley Brewer and people like that, you know, do have some interesting things to say about this because it's so off the wall. It's so crazy that there is a lot of people who agree with, you know, on certain things with all this type of stuff because it's so crazy that all you need is to be remotely sane and you'll push back on it. Now, I don't agree with everything that Julia Hartley Brewer says, obviously, but I think she's a decent journalist. She's probably one of the better ones on talk radio. It's considered to be right wing over here, and I thought what she said on this was pretty good this morning.
I would like to just point out a few key things regarding Saturday night and indeed the reaction ever since, because thousands of the great and the good on the media and on social media, including politicians from pretty much every party, have queued up to denounce the policing of the vigil on Saturday night, which saw heavy-handed, aggressive policing of peaceful women meeting to remember the Sarah Everard after her murder. There were, let's face it, grotesque images of early police officers throwing young women to the ground to handcuff them as they met to remember a murdered woman when the chief suspect, let us not forget, charged but not yet convicted with of that crime, being a serving police officer. But isn't all of that completely beside the point? All of those images and all of the emotion and the reason why people were meeting, isn't that completely and utterly irrelevant? Either the event, whether it was a vigil or a protest, whether it was about a murdered woman or anything else, isn't the question was whether that event was legal or not? And clearly, under lockdown laws, supported by the vast majority of people in this country, that protest was not legal. It is, frankly, absurd and hypocritical for people who have hitherto cheered on ever more authoritarian rules, controlling every single aspect of our lives, barring even two people meeting in the open air to protest, to suddenly now claim that the right to protest is, even in a pandemic, sacrosanct. Even more so when some of those people are politicians like Home Secretary Priti Patel and Labour MP Jess Phillips, those who voted for those very laws. Where were they when police were manhandling people peacefully protesting lockdown rules, charging into peaceful crowds, dragging them to the ground to handcuff them? Or do they just think that lockdown laws banning public protests are for other people protesting other things that they don't care about or agree with? If you only defend the right to protest for causes that you approve of, peopled by people like you, or go down well with the opinion polls and the focus groups, then you don't actually believe in the right to protest. Who would ever have thought that voting in authoritarian rules limiting our fundamental civil liberties would lead to that very basic right to gather in public protest peacefully being crushed by heavy-handed policing? As always, once again, with the lockdown laws, be careful what you wish for. Right, let's get to our first guest now at 7:08, Tabitha Morton, who's deputy leader of the Women's Equality Party and a spokeswoman on violence against women. Tabitha, good morning to you.
Hiya, Julia.
Good morning. Were you at the demonstration, the vigil, the protest, whatever we're calling it, on Saturday night?
I wasn't. I was at a virtual demonstration. But I think this is quite distracting because what we need to focus on is ending violence against women and girls. And we have to make it a political and policing priority. Women are dying across the country and millions of women affected by this. So we cannot be distracted by this one incident.
Okay. We will talk about We will talk about those key stories. I mean, that's what this was about fundamentally. But let's talk just specifically first off, if we can, about the policing of this protest. You didn't attend this. This was supposed to be a vigil, and it was organised. And they went to court to get the right to have this event. They were told, well, the court basically said it's up to the police. The police said, no, you can't go ahead, and so the vigil was cancelled. Now, there's lots of arguments that actually they had a PA system. It would have been, there would have been stewards. It could have all been socially distanced. It could have gone off safely. There wouldn't have been trouble. As it was, there were a lot of people, a lot of crowds. It looked to me, I mean, certainly from the footage I've seen, the people who were there, that it was actually, you know, almost entirely completely peaceful. There were some people with banners about the police. There were some people shouting abuse at the police. But largely the blame has been put on the police for going in heavy-handed and dealing with it. Do you think the police should have gone in at all? Or do you think that once those people had gathered that they should have been allowed to protest or hold their vigil?
I think the police were given an opportunity to work with the organisers, and they missed that that opportunity. And the leadership of this shows the police attitude to women and to domestic violence and to violence against
women. What do you mean, the police?
But of course it doesn't. Because the government and a lot of these politicians who are showing great solidarity with women voted to bring in these draconian laws, which the police, if they're being consistent with, have to exercise their authority that the state and the government has legislated. But it's as usual, they want their cake and eat it.
It's attitude. To women.
The police's attitude. So just last year, two Met police officers are alleged to have taken selfies with the murdered bodies of Nicole Smallman and Bieber Henry. Those are still employed by the Met police. You know, women are afraid of reporting to the police. We need to make this a priority and unpick the attitudes that the police and politicians have.
Okay. You're talking about two officers who did something. That's not necessarily representative of... Why is this representative of the police attitude to women? What about the protesters, the lockdown protesters, who also had exactly the same treatment from the police? And a lot of those would have been men. Does that betray the police attitude to men?
When you look at the convictions for domestic violence, the convictions...
No, answer my point. No, answer my point. Answer the question I've actually asked you, rather than just talking about whatever you've got written down there.
No, I think this is all part of the bigger picture.
So answer my question.
Go on, say your question again.
Exactly, you didn't even bother listening to it because you were just going to say what you wanted to say. How can you say this policing of this event showed the police attitude to women? When the police event, the police other events which involve men as well and men are arrested, does that show the police attitude to men?
The police were given an opportunity to allow a peaceful protest to go ahead and they didn't allow it. So that to me shows everything you need to know about this.
Well, no, it doesn't. They didn't allow it because it's illegal under the current lockdown rules.
It is not illegal. You can't have COVID safe. And the court actually ruled that the organisers could allow to have a COVID safe protest.
Okay, well, I mean,
there
have been a number of events in the last year, including lockdown protests, where they could have been exactly the same number of people, and they've been policed just exactly the same.
I wish you were putting so much energy into actually looking at how we end violence against women and girls.
Well, we're not going to end violence against women and girls.
Why is that?
Because we're not going to end violence in society in total, because that's not possible, because unfortunately there are always going to be some violent people. But let's talk about the generalities then.
We don't need to end violence, and that's why we've got to make this a policing and political priority.
Okay, so how are we going...
Policing and political priority, ending violence against women, this is just basically putting a target on, increasing the target on men. That's what this is all about. Hostility towards men, not by a bunch of hysterical feminists. And who's to be scared of who, you know?
To end violence against women and girls.
Well, first off, we need to make sure that it's a priority from national and local government. We have to fund services so that we actually... Do you know that in this country it costs over £266 billion to deal with the effects of violence? Women...
Who's committing the crimes? Are we allowed to have that discussion? Do we target... If you really care about protecting women, are you going to be a bit more specific in targeting those perpetrating the crimes against women? Or is that conversation, that's the elephant in the room, isn't it, of course?
trade report that you, if you actually just invested £393 million, you could deal and help to rebuild women's lives. So we're just not even starting to do that. We need to make sure that the judicial system is overhauled as well. You know, in this country, rape has almost been decriminalized. Only 2%.
And I did a story where 1 in 7 child deaths in a borough of East London are basically deaths as a result of incest. And there's a blind eye turned to that, and there was also a complete and utter blind eye turned to the grooming gang scandal.
Cases were convicted last year.
Yeah, but you know why cases are not getting convictions. It's because large number of the cases that come forward, there is unfortunately no evidence that, not enough evidence, certainly not beyond a reasonable doubt, when there are two people in a room, particularly if there has been that awful phrase, date rape, where they've actually known each other, that there's no evidence. You can't actually convict someone on someone's say-so. That is the reality.
The conviction rates are so low because the CPS have made a decision to only bring certain cases forward. This has been highlighted by the victim commissioner, Davina Baird, continually. These are decisions that are made that basically say to women that it's not what happens to you is not important. And that's why we're calling on Sadiq Khan in London, the national government, to actually make this a priority, because we believe you can, Women's Equality Party believe you can end violence. This is not inevitable.
You say it's not inevitable. There has never been a society in which there has not been violence. Now, we live in a much less violent society, in a much less violent society towards women and girls in particular, than any previous society on the planet. The world is a safer place for women now than it has ever been. We're going in the right direction. So, even outrageous suggestions like that. Ignore the fact that even if there is only sort of one man in a million who is a risk to women, women will still take precautions when they walk home at night, being careful, having the keys in their hand, you know, wanting to wear flat shoes so you could run rather than heels. Women take precautions all the time, even if the risk is very, very, very tiny. We're never going to actually stop all of the risk in the same way that, I know that 400 people passing my home, if I left my window wouldn't open, wouldn't burgle me, but one might. I still have to close and lock my window when I go out. We have to take precautions against the tiny number of people who are a risk, don't we?
I don't think that 1.6 million women suffering from domestic abuse and 750,000 women reporting rape and sexual assault is a small number. I think that's a huge number. And I think that we need to invest
a lot, how many of them are actually genuine, and how many of them know that the state's on their side, and all they've got to do is make an accusation against some boyfriend who might have hurt their feelings or whatever in this feminist-charged environment we live in, because they know that the accusation itself is going to get loads of attention. This is why this is dangerous, because women, guess what? They're not all whiter than white and lovely and righteous people. They're bitter, and they lie as well, and they do all sorts of things. So all these accusations of rape, that doesn't mean it's the case.
We need to think about sex and relationship education for all of our kids. We need to talk about consent in schools. That's how we root this out. We need to start with the legislation and the police and the politicians, but we also need to educate our kids, because 1 in 5 kids grow up in a home that sees domestic violence. So that's why we've got a violent world around us.
I couldn't agree with you more in terms of teaching about sex and relationships and consent and the like. I think a lot of people, and I know I'll get shouted down for this, but as a woman, I feel like to say, we talk about 1.6 million women living in domestic abuse relationships. I understand, I've spoken to enough victims of domestic abuse to understand how these are often very slow processes. And by the time you're in a situation where you are living in that abuse, often you have been isolated from your family, you are alone. Is not the first thing we should start to do is to make sure we get more of these women out of these homes?
Absolutely, but I don't believe that we need to get them out of the homes. We need to remove the perpetrators from them.
But
that's why I talked earlier about investing in services, community-based services that help women to understand, spot those signs, and to rebuild their lives and move away from that. This is a multifaceted thing. We have to invest in services, make this a priority nationally and locally. and educate our young people. And that's how we end it.
And you said you talked about the police attitude to women. Do you think there is fundamentally a problem with the police attitude to women? And does that include Cressida Dick, the Metropolitan Police Chief?
I think there's a societal attitude, including the police and politicians.
A societal attitude? In what way?
They see this as a women's issue. They don't see this as a societal issue, that men need to be part of this. Men are the perpetrators here, and they need to be part of this. So, yes, of course.
But the men who aren't the perpetrators of it, the men who don't rape and kill and domestically abuse, which is the vast majority of men, they're not responsible for it.
They are responsible for calling out misogynist behaviour. They're responsible for dismissing.
Well, so are women.
Exactly, and that's what we're doing. That's what you're seeing millions of women across the country doing.
Okay, Tabitha Morton, really good to talk.
So, in other words, it's a bit like this racism narrative where it's not enough just not to be racist or to have no evidence in your life of being racist or whatever. You have to be seen to be calling it out, otherwise you're part of the problem. That's what I mean. This narrative is so dangerous because these things, they sound good, don't they? Oh, we care. It's like Black Lives Matter. Well, who's going to argue with that? And who's going to argue against, that domestic abuse is a good thing? But these things always get weaponized and they always get politicized. And all that's going to happen is men are going to have much larger targets on their back. That's all that's going to happen here. And probably you won't see a reduction in violence towards women or anything. All you're going to see is mass virtue signaling and a bigger target on men's shoulders. And again, the irony of these people who, if it's white people, you can generalize. If it's a man, you can generalize. But if you were to talk about black people in the same generality or Jews in the same way, well, you're just a bigot, dangerous racist. But so, again, it's just the inconsistency and the double standards. But we shouldn't be surprised. It's all we get all the time. Just going to see if there's any other, any interesting news on this. Because this is dominated over here over the weekend. And, it's already a politically correct, woke charged environment as it is, without adding to it. I mean, it's just this hysteria just exploded. It's quite frightening over the weekend. All of a sudden, we've got this crisis of violence towards women. Women are dying en masse in this country. We need to be doing something about it. Just out of the blue, this explodes. Yeah, Priti Patel statement on the policing. More hypocrisy. Home Secretary Priti Patel, she's given a statement on policing in Commons from around 3:30. Police set up a cordon in an area of Kent around 30 miles from where Sarah Everett's body was found. Officers seen searching Co-op car park in sandwich shop in Kent. Prince Harry or Prince William's wife, she was there with no mask on. Loads of them were there with no masks on. She said she remembered what it feels like to walk around London at night. The Duchess of Cambridge made the visit to Clapham Common on Saturday afternoon, close to where the 33-year-old went missing, to pay her respects to Mrs. Everard and her family in the wake of the marketing executive's murder. The Duchess visited a bandstand in the park, where she added to the dozens of floral tributes that have been placed for Mrs. Everard by mourners, whose body was formally identified on Friday. Anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there because that's pretty much, what's been happening over here. Well, I'm not going to start anything new because I think we're coming up to the end of the show. But, just absolute more cultural Marxist weaponizing against the evil group of men and the defended victim group of women. Not a great time to be a white male, to put it mildly. I mean, where is it all going to end? Anyway, folks, I'll be back again next Monday, same time. That will be the 22nd of March. You've been listening here to Paul Stevenson on revisionmedia.org. I will be live on Republic Broadcasting Network at, well, in an hour's time. So live on there with Richard Carey on Republic Broadcasting Network on Beyond the Official Narrative at midday Eastern Central Time. It'll be 5 p.m. here. Usually it's 6, but the clocks have gone forward and changed in the United States. But they haven't gone forward here yet, so we're just 4 hours ahead of you Eastern Standard Time-wise and 5 of Central Time. So until then, folks, I'll catch you next week.